Welcome back to the Boltcast, your AMS2 podcast. I'm Steel. With me, as always, is my cohort in arms, Oz, live in the Steelcast 27 virtual studios. Today, we have something very special. Fresh off his interview with Mike Smith at Race Department, the founder of Raises Studios and head project developer for Automobilista 2, we have none other than Renato Simeoni. Renato, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here. Great to be talking to you. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, everyone listening is probably knows you already from the Automobilista franchise, but I know I've looked into your history or background a little bit. You've been involved in over half a dozen games and other projects. So my first question for you is, no one goes into sim racing game development without a passion for motorsports. What was your first motorsports memory that you can recall?
Well, that's going back a long time. I'm in my early 40s now. So I grew up in during the Senna years in Brazil. And pretty much everybody from my generation is a Senna fan and a Formula One fan as a consequence. Because Senna was such a prominent figure in our generation in the early 80s, late 80s, early 90s, which is when I was growing up. So that was the initial, that planted the initial bug. And from there, I was also very much into video games, so it was logical that I would be interested in racing games. And my first experience with racing was watching Formula One. I went to the Brazil. My first Grand Prix was the Brazilian Grand Prix from 94, which was the last race from Senna in Brazil. Wow. And that was a completely intoxicating experience for me. Around the same time was the first time that I had experience with the first Geoff Crammond Formula One game on the PC, which was likewise a similarly intoxicating experience for me. Driving with a keyboard on a 386 with 8 frames per second, it felt like I was in the car. So for me, from that moment on, I was besides hooked on motorsports, I was hooked into sim racing and playing pretty much everything that came out that was more serious about simulating race cars. And the rest is history. I was primarily a user for many years, and like any bona fide sim racer, I always thought that I knew better and that physics could be better than they were. So I started dabbing a little bit at the time of that R Factor came out, the first one, in late 2005, early 2006. I started dabbing with physics files, having no idea what I was doing, but experimenting with it, and I was really convinced that I knew everything that I was to know about physics development, so much so that I began working on some mod projects. And I was involved with the Grand Prix 1979 mod for R Factor. That was my first big project in terms of being a developer, so to speak, a modder, but also someone that was involved in leading a big project. And from that came my first professional experience with Simbin, which right around this time in which we were releasing this Grand Prix 1979 mods, they had split from what came to become Slightmat Studios. So Simbin and Slightmat Studios used to be the same company. They split, and a lot of the developers went to Slightmat Studios. So Simbin was hunting for new developers. I was lucky enough that my name was up there during this time because of the mods. And they thought that I could be someone that could help them develop physics. And I went to work for them. That was late 2007. So that's how it started, the professional life.
All right. But then there's a point where you decided to go out on your own and start your own independent company, start a small business, so to speak. And that's a pretty big step. And what was that, around 2009 that you decided to come up with Razor?
Yep. I had a couple of years, almost 2 years with Simbin. And it was a great experience. But throughout the time, I was nearly pinching myself that I was actually working with the stuff and getting paid to do it. when I was happy to do it for free. But as we went on, I gradually became more earning to have a little bit more control. I'm a bit of a control freak, I guess you could say. And I was just one of the developers. I had no say on the course of the product overall. And I wanted more of it. And around that time, Simbing had just had released. I was working on the race series and the mods that came out for it, and also on the race pro game that was for the Xbox 360, which was their debut into consoles. It was a very problematic production because they were developing their own engine. They had switches of publishers halfway. They had reduced. They had the split with Lightmat Studios early on. So there was a lot going on with the company. And there was a financial crisis at the end of 2008, which really hit them hard. And they were getting rid of the consultants, which I was one of the last ones to join them. And the writing was a little bit on the wall there for me. And I began coming up to think, what was it that I could do to continue working with Team Racing and get myself more control of it. And my impression working for Simbing is that, as many game studios at the time, there was a lot of money that was not going to the product itself. It was just setting up a physical structure that was important to convince publishers to back whatever projects they were proposing.
You mean like buildings?
Yeah, they had Simbing was relatively a small company, but they had three physical studios, wow, with a lot of people, and that was really costly, really costly. And I think that was around the time there was a boom in indie game developers, because people began to realize that you really didn't need all that to make the game, and that's fundamentally what drove me to start something. That I thought, if I had a good team of people, a good small team of people with the right core skills, and we can get a game engine, which will, even if from a third party, which is also what Simbing was doing, even though they were developing that engine by themselves by then, right, we could do a decent product ourselves, which was small but profitable, and allow ourselves all the control that we needed to take things in the direction that we wanted without being reliant necessarily on outside funding.
Right.
So that was the idea, and that's how I started talking to people in the community to see if I could find those people that would help me, because I was just one guy, right? I needed a track modeler, needed someone to model the car, someone right, to do the audio, even someone to do the physics, because I was not going to be able to concentrate on that anymore. And I was just lucky that there were people willing to join me on that adventure.
Yeah, you preempted my next question. And, you know, obviously you have a network of all of these people that you're working with and around. They may be your peers and things like that. And they're on the, you know, if they're in the market, you know, that would be a great talent pool to draw from. So, yeah, my question was going to be, you know, what type of talent? You said track, modeling, physics, audio. What would you say would be the core group? If you were going to start one small game design, what core aspects of the game design do you need to have in place to start a sim development company?
What we had to begin with, and what I would consider to be the essentials, once you have a game engine that you and your fellow developers are familiar with, was to have someone to develop the tracks, model the tracks, and do the basic textures for them. Mm-hmm. Someone to do the track side objects. So it's another 3D modeler focused on objects surrounding the track and texturing those objects. Someone to model the cars, someone to do levers for the cars, someone an audio designer to do the sounds, and a physics developer. Those are that's the core of the team and pretty much what we had when we began.
Right. So you moved into AMS1 and it was highly regarded. I learned of AMS1 a couple of years ago. I learned of Reza a couple of years ago. I didn't play AMS1. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to play any of your other games or mods. I'm relatively new to sim racing myself, but before I made the commitment to AMS2, I obviously, well, it's me. I do my research. And you were highly regarded. Reza was highly regarded. Everything you touched upon had positive reviews, and I was like, if they're coming out with this AMS2 project that's associated with Madness Engine, that I had played Project Cars 2, I didn't have any problem with it at the time, you know, with my limited experience, I thought those two things were golden for me, so it helped me to make that decision. So AMS1, you know, you have this project together, you have your team together. Did you have to learn from scratch with the engine, or did you have a basic knowledge?
Yeah, the big jump for us with Automobilista 1, because Automobilista 1 was actually, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but back in 2015, we had a crowdfunding campaign because we had just developed, just licensed the ISI source code, the ISI motor source code, which was the game engine that we were using. But up to that point, we were only using a closed version of the engine, so to speak. It's just we couldn't change the source code to add new features or to change how it worked. It was just we could insert some new features into it with plugins and everything else, but it's all outside the source code. So in 2015, we licensed the ISI source code for what would come to become Automobilista 2. But when we did that, we suddenly had a really large possibilities to develop the game that we had at that point, which was Stock Car Extreme. Now with the source code, there are a lot of small things that we could do to it that would make it a lot better quickly because we had the source code.
This is why they said, some people say that it's that you changed around, was it like 40% of the code for AMS1, like ended up being like 40% different from the original ISI engine?
I'm not sure if you can say that's a percentage. No, I don't think it comes up to that much. We did a lot of features, but for example, the engine didn't have a dynamic track build-up condition, which was one of the things that we proposed to do. I'm not sure if I recall everything else that we had in mind, but there were several cool features that the engine didn't offer that we could develop for it relatively quickly, now that we had the source code. But we couldn't do because the game, the Stock Car Extreme game, was already very much towards the end of its shelf life, so there was not a lot of value for us to invest on it. In terms of returning sales. So what we proposed with the crowdfunding campaign was, look guys, if you want us to develop this game further, we need to reach $100,000 or however much it was that we were asking for in order to deliver some quick improvements to this game before we move on to develop the next title, which was Automobilista 2, even though the Automobilista name didn't exist at the time.
What time frame were you talking about when you made that decision? And did you have a complete like concept or vision for AMS2 when you?
Pretty much. We licensed the source code. We finalized the deal around halfway mid 2015, and we were planning somewhat optimistically to deliver this new game towards the end of 2016. But we could deliver these improvements to Stock Car Extreme with the source code by the end of 2015. So within a 6 month time frame, we could develop the game further with a lot of new features, some new cars, some new tracks. If we could meet this crowdfunding target. And we did meet it. So that was that allowed us to continue working on Stock Car Extreme before moving on to this new project, which was also supposed to set us up to this new project, because everything that we were doing then was supposed to carry over to the next title. And as we got on, once that crowdfunding campaign was concluded and we were successful, we started doing the work. And we begin to find even more things that we could do that would make the game better and somewhat quickly. But it was quickly getting a project that was almost a completely different game. So at that point, we said, and the idea was to develop the crowdfunding campaign for us to develop both Stock Car Extreme, which was one of the games we had out, and the Formula Truck game, which was another title focused on the truck series that we had out at that time. As we approached the end of 2015, we proposed to the crowdfunding backers. We asked them, look, we have the possibility of combining everything, going even further than we proposed on the campaign, and making a completely new title exclusively to Steam, which at the time we were on Steam and outside, which was a little bit cumbersome to deliver updates for. We couldn't do the DLCs that way, so it was very restrictive, the structure that we had for these titles. So that was the idea. We can combine these two titles into a single one. We can take it to Steam. We can do even further development than we anticipated, and you guys don't have to pay anything else. We can do all that with the funding that we have and with the prospective funding that we will have from having this new title on Steam. And largely everyone from the backers from the crowdfunding campaign supported the idea, and that's how Automobilista was born. So it was essentially a combination of the titles that we were, a merger of the titles that we were working on with the crowdfunding campaign, with some extra perspectives that we got along the way.
Right. So how much did you take from that experience that you can take into Automobilista 2? I know you did a lot of hard work with AMS 1. You know, is it all a complete loss, or is there a lot that you can take that you took with you?
That was a lot that we could carry over. It was never an option for us to switch game engines and start from scratch. If we had to do that, the engine wasn't an option. So we had to have an engine that had some overlap to allow us to have a natural progression. Not only in terms of production, because we couldn't afford to the time that it would take to do everything again. And also because of a continuity in terms of what the game was offering. If we wanted to stick with the things that we were doing right at the time, there had to be some of this overlap.
Right.
So that was one of the requirements, and that obviously limited the pools of options that we have for the game engine for the next one. And actually, we never planned to jump to another engine. The idea was to develop the engine that we had just licensed for Automobilista 2. But that was proving really complex because the code base was really, really old. ISI had begun developing it back in the 90s. So It just needed a lot of work. It was beyond what we could do. We didn't have the engineering, software engineering capacity to turn that to a modern engine. So when we realized that, we began shopping around for another game engine option. But we had this constraint, which was to find an engine that had some overlap with the engine that we were using, that delivered on things that we wanted from the engine that we wanted to develop ourselves, at least some of it, and that we could afford, and that we had someone willing to license it for us.
Right.
So that was a tricky thing to find, and it was just our great fortune that Zlatmet Studios not only was willing to do it, but they pretty much volunteered the engine for it to give us a chance to work on it and see what could be done with the technology. But even then, we didn't jump into it blind. They gave us a chance. They gave access to the engine to us with no strings attached. We could play around with it for a couple of months to see if it was something that was manageable to us. And only after we had this experience did we have to put it to paper and commit to using the engine. So it was really exceptional for them to give that access to us without anything, because that's very unusual that you get a chance to get your, as a small studio as we are and were at the time, even more, to get your hands on a AAA engine with no price tag attached, no demands, no upfront fees. Just play around with it. It was great that they gave us that opportunity. And what we found was that the engine was really everything that we needed from it. Of course, there was a lot of work to do. There's still a lot of work to do. in order to deliver everything that we wanted to do. But in terms of a baseline platform, which had a much better graphics engine than we were used to, which had a number of features, VR support including, and a variety of physics components that we need, and great performance, and even some assets, some graphical assets that they could offer, they could bundle with the deal for us, in terms of trucks and cars.
Okay.
They supplied everything to us. So that was really that came from heaven from our perspective.
So did they provide everything for the cars? Was it just the modeling, and did they provide all the parameters?
No, just the model. They provided everything, but we had to give it our flavor, right? If we were just to redo the Project Cars 2 game, it wouldn't have any unique value to anyone. So it was always about the tracks. We were not interested on the track itself, only the track side objects, the buildings and everything else. The track itself, we always model ourselves. In the cars, we get the 3D model, but the physics and the audio we do from scratch, always.
I imagine you, during that 2-month trial of the engine, you probably, did you like try some specific cars from AMS-1, like importing that over? Or like what was the...
The first one, the first two cars that we exported, if I recall, was a stock car from 2017, which is the same car from 2019 that we have in the game at the moment. The Formula Trainer, and maybe the AJR, I think. Those were the three cars. And Imola. Imola was the first track that we got in. And towards the end of the, or in the beginning of the second month, you could drive the stock car around Imola with the Madness engine. And it was really, really rough, really rough. The first feedback was almost non-existent. We're still figuring out the graphics engine. The audio engine was completely different because we were using the Miles sound system with the ISI engine, and Madness runs on FMOD. So there was a learning curve also there for our audio designer. So even though it was really rough, I could see the DNA of the game that we had already there. In that initial experience, I was probably the only one in the team that could see, because everybody else just had no idea what the car was doing. But to me, it was already there. The genesis of what made Automobilista was already there. And I said, yeah, we can get there working on this. Every month that has gone since then, I think it further highlights that, even though we have a lot of people that don't necessarily agree with that, I think it's the overlap between Automobilista 1 and 2 is really big, both in terms of the experience itself and the physics, because 70% of the physics in Automobilista 1 is in Automobilista 2. The chassis physics is very similar, suspension physics almost identical for the cars that are the same between the two games. The engine physics is largely similar. There's a whole new driveline model in Madness relative to ISI Motor, which is a lot more complex. The tire model also is completely different. So those are big components, and it takes a lot of development in order to bridge the differences and get the best of this new technology. But even then, if you consider chassis, engine, suspension, part of the transmission code, if there's an overlap there, you have a lot of the same physics from one game also in the other. So for us, the DNA was, at least as far as physics goes, it was always there and it's still there.
So we're talking about the interplay between this new driveline and putting it into the physics package that already existed in as a construct from AMS-1. Do you think that there's any contention there? Things that you need to iron out still. I read the patch notes religiously, as you know. not just for the videos, but I'd literally read them over and over again, and I always find nuggets of pure gold. Driveline inertia, intake manifold was the recent one, clutch plate inertia. Anytime I see, it's just like a one line in the change log. No one really explains what it means, but to me, it's fascinating. So yeah, could you explain a little bit if there's any contention between those two? Are you still trying to figure out how that driveline's fitting in those cars?
To some degree, yes. I think there is very little that is for us to learn now. Some things that we have no idea how it works. At one point, that was the case. There were things that we just didn't understand yet, because these models are much, much more sophisticated right. in madness than they were in the old engine. And the thing when you have something that is more complex, more sophisticated, is you have a bigger potential, but you also have larger possibilities to screw it up and have something that is not even doing the basic work right. And I think that was the case early on in some elements of the driveline. Even today, some of the differential in some of the LSD cars are not working 100% yet as they should. So there's still more work to be done there, but there's nothing that we don't really understand anymore. It's just a matter of getting the right values in there so that the result is what we expect. So there was a learning curve involved, even more than I expected. And I wouldn't discard the possibility that there are big things that we are still to find. The throttle manifold that we just fixed on the last update. If you had asked me 2 months ago if there was a problem there, I would say no, it's all right. And then we find out that it's not all right. There's a big problem there. So that happens when you're dealing with a new technology. And a new game engine, especially something as complex and so rich in details as a new physics engine, there is a lot that you can miss until a certain amount of time has passed by. So even though I don't think we have more than fine-tuning to be done now, I would say it's very likely that we'll find out some big problem that we hadn't spotted before. So in a way, it's a good thing. We were actually finding things with ISI motor after 15 years working on that engine. By the end of Automobilista 1 development, as I was porting the physics from the cars in Automobilista 1 to Automobilista 2, I was finding big mistakes that we had done in Automobilista 1. So this kind of thing is normal in a development process. The longer you work in something, the more you find. The more room for improvement you manage to dig up, and the more polished the whole thing will become. That's just natural. It's inherent to the activity.
Yeah, it's building an institutional knowledge, I guess, right? So so specific cars though, you know, do you have a challenge when you bring out something like the 74 RSR? You know, reading the notes again, like you'll see a change to the center of gravity. Are these types of, you know, where do you get the center of gravity? That's always, you know, where do you Google search the Porsche RSR center of gravity?
It depends on the car, and that's one area that is a lot of how can I put it politely, a lot of nonsense in the sim racing community, because you don't really have the center of gravity for 1972 Lotus 72.
Who do you call?
you don't have that. You don't have that. You don't have the exact measures of everything. The center of pressure, the diffuser center of pressure.
Right.
In a car like that, or in a historical Formula One car, there are a lot of parameters that you're guesstimating, but you're doing educated guesses on, because you have data for another similar car. Some of the cars, especially the new ones, you have everything. You can measure everything, or you develop a relationship with the manufacturer, where you can talk directly to the engineer who has most of these measures.
Right.
But even in those cases, you have a lot of gaps in terms of, because the physics engine is interpretation of reality, right? It's not reality. And there are a lot of things that you need to plug into a physics engine that is not measurable in reality. You calculate it based on the parameters, on the things that are measurable, but you're still filling up the gaps a little bit there. And it's small, even small, really small discrepancies can make a huge deal. We were talking about how much of an impact tweaking the default setup can make in the driving experience. I imagine that instead of having 100 parameters or whatever there is to adjust in a car setup in game, you have thousands of parameters. And imagine that in terms of center of gravity that we're speaking, we're talking about millimeters, adjusting the center of gravity by millimeters and completely changing the car. If you take a car as it is now in the game and compare to how it was on release, if you're looking at the files, you'll see that's 99% the same. Or the values that have changed incrementally for in one direction or another. But those changes add up to a very big difference. So it's a lot less exact science and a lot more labor and trial and error than people would like to believe.
I like to say art. That's an
art.
Well,
yeah. I think it's an interesting halfway between an art form and an exact science.
Yes.
It's certainly not just an art form, but it's certainly not just an exact science. And anyone who's telling you that they have an exact science, they just plug the values that the manufacturer provided and you have an exact representation of the car as it is in real life, they're simply bullshitting you, I'm sorry to say.
Right.
It doesn't work like that.
So let's draw the line, though. You know, I've read the Q&A from a couple of months ago, obviously, keeping in touch with everything that you've written. There seems to be a line between, you know, the physics package of the cars, the interplay of the cars to the track, with the actual internal legacy code. So a lot of the times people were suggesting, you know, driver swaps, timetables. That seems to be in another area of, you know, recoding the, you know, just the interface and how the data is, you know, all that. How that works. Is that something that you anticipated as going to be a challenge? Why does that take longer than other things?
It all depends on how the code base is structured. Some features are just more achievable than others, the way the engine has been conceived. People have to understand that we didn't develop the engine from the ground up. And if we're trying to do something that is fundamentally different to how the engine was conceived, I'll give you an example. People often have complaints, and it was one of my reservations against the Madden's engine about the replay system. Because I really like replays. I really enjoy watching the replays and being able to jump back and forth. And the Madden's engine is really restrictive in terms of you can't really watch replays live. You can't really jump back and forth. So there are a lot of restrictions that other games don't suffer from, including Automobile 1. And people say, well, why don't you change this? Whenever other game is doing something more manageable, or something more feature-rich, why are replays in Automobile 2 so limited? Because we have the game uses a technology which is called Live Track, which is used to simulate dynamic track conditions and the results of the dynamic weather. And it's a really intrinsic system, and it has to play out in real time. So if you're watching a replay and you are able to jump back and forth, the data won't be restored the same way. Basically, the way that the system has been conceived and engineered limits the ability that we have to develop more options on the replay system. It effectively constrains how the replay system works. So it's the kind of thing that you have, you take the good with the bad, right? You have a really good piece of technology in LiveTrack, which I think makes a substantial difference in terms of realism. But in, the other side of the coin is that the replay options are more limited because of it. And sure, you can expand that. We have plans there are some things that we can improve there to give a little bit more than we have at the moment. But it's always going to be limited relative to other things because of the way it has been engineered and put together. So those same design constraints apply to various other phones. And people may not agree with everything the way it is. We may not agree with everything the way it has been conceived. But sometimes you just have to take the good with the bad and realize that in order to have one thing, you have to sacrifice some other thing.
Right.
That comes with the territory of game design.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So let's segue a little bit. Oz is a guy that I rely on for, you know, technical discussions. I think we've spent part of the origination of this podcast was the realization that we were spending hours talking about LSDs, Oz. I mean, we still do. Just the other night, I was up until 3 a.m. talking.
Which kind?
Limited slip, just the regular clutch. talking about the friction and any viscous elements, you know, to clutch plate oil and how they might affect the locking and unlocking. Not knowing, neither of us are, you know, in race engineers. I'll just raise my hand. I'm not a race engineer. But it's so fascinating to us to see that interplay between sim and simulating real life mechanics. So I'm going to hand it over to him. He has some questions for you about, and he's going to drill a little bit into the physics, if you don't mind.
And to be clear, I'm not. I think you already said, but I'm not an engineer either. And I'm just fascinated by the logic, or because it, as you said, it gets really complicated with sims. And basically, one of my pet peeves is when people talk about physics, like the physics are wrong, or they should rewrite the physics, or I don't know, whatever. People say all kinds of stuff, right? What does the word physics actually mean to you when it comes to the engine, like Madness or the ISI engine?
Yeah, well, it's everything. It's everything from the baseline technology, the baseline physics logic that you have that's not even accessible to us, to the physics model of the various vehicle components, which is simulating the dynamics of the cars. Chassis, aero, suspension, engine, tires. Each of these components have their own model. And there are physics model, which you there's a lot of internal logic to it, but the possibility to plug in parameters in order to simulate different kind of cars, right? And within those, what we do, we don't really work much on the technology side of things. We take things as they are. Largely, for one side, because we know, for example, in terms of chassis and aero and suspension physics, we know these models are accurate because they're the same to the ones that we were already using, and people more smarter than us have already measured them to be reliable. In our experience, everything on the tire model and the driveline model also stands up to the smell test. And so it's all about how you what you plug into these models in order to get the correct output. So that's the area we're working on, the parametrization of this of these models in order to get the right results. So for instance, we were talking about differentials and LSD differentials. For the longest time, the differential was not working on LSD cars. It was not working correctly. It was effectively working as a spool because it was not providing any slip and no wheel speed differences between the inside and the outside driven wheels. So that was a problem that it's even a little bit embarrassing that we didn't realize earlier than we did. But there was nothing to do with the differential. We were just noticing the problem through the differential. The problem was that in the driveline model, you have a variety of components simulated from wheel bearings to the wheels themselves, to I don't even recall all the components that we had there, but even a variety of small details modeled in, and now they all have their own parameters. And a lot of the drivetrain issues that we had came down to the wheel bearings being excessively sticky. And it took us ages to realize that. And they were sticky because they had the wrong values. And in a lot of things, we're just following the lead from SlideMed Studios, who, after all, had developed the engine. It made sense for us to just go use their baseline and develop on top of that. But even there, they made some mistakes interpreting the technology that we carried on with it until we realized there was a problem there. Then we were able to correct it. There are still some problems with diffs that relate to tires not producing enough slip. But that's another area, because all these physics models that we are discussing, they interact with each other, right? To make a whole vehicle dynamics model. And if one thing isn't right somewhere, you may find the consequence of that error in some completely different area. So that was the cause. That was the case in the differential. There were some cars early on that I'm not sure if you recall that had that were really bouncing under hard corners. You'd see them up with some high frequency bouncing because they're running on bump stops, and the immediate impression that you had, there's something wrong with the suspension model because the car is running out of travel and running on bump stops. But that wasn't the case. It was actually the tire model that had problems and was offering a little bit too much grip at the wrong time, and the carcass physics was not strong enough, so it was collapsing too much under load, and with it overloading the suspension, which in turn would hit the bump stops. So the fix was not in the suspension at all. The fix was on the tires. And you can't really guesstimate this type of thing. You can't really jump into trying to fix until you can realize what the source of the problem is. And that's a process. Sometimes you know there is a problem there, but you have to keep working and keep researching until you realize what exactly the source is of the problem. And then you're able to do something about it. I think right now we don't have many areas that are severely flawed. But as I said earlier, it wouldn't surprise me to realize some grave mistake there as we go along still. And that happened with the engine that we are used to, even after 15 years working with that. And it's an ongoing process. And I think it's an ongoing process for any racing sim that is serious about achieving realism. None of the models are perfectly accurate. You're always subject to getting something fundamentally wrong. And as you spot that, you have to correct it. But it's a process. It's not something that happens overnight, and not even within 1.5 years.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned the spool. I remember both of those. So I remember one particular one was when the Formula V used to have a spool. And we had a community race, and as you can imagine, it was a bit chaotic. And then also remember the Ginetta, I think the Ginetta G58 was particularly bouncy. But yeah, I remember both of those that you mentioned.
The Porsches had an actual suspension problem, because the Porsches have helper springs, right? And we ported over the helper spring logic was something that we developed ourselves for Automobilista 1. The original engine didn't have that.
I was going to ask about the helper spring. I have had some just discussions. I don't really understand suspension myself, but I have had discussions where someone was wondering, why do they even have, because you mentioned the helper spring in the changelog, right? So they were wondering, why do they even model the helper spring if it's just like, is there a short explanation for why you even need to have the helper spring there to begin with?
Well, the simple answer is that some cars do have them. So if you want to accurately simulate a car, you need to simulate the component that the real car has. So the helper spring is not on every car. If I remember correctly, only the Porsches in Automobilista 2 have helper springs. But in developing, in porting the code that we had developed to Automobilista 1, to Automobilista 2, we got the logic wrong and inverted a value somewhere. So the helper spring was behaving exactly the opposite than it should do. And the car was bouncing all over the map. And that's something that came to the fore quite quickly. And obviously we had to correct that. But yeah, that's the kind of silly mistake that you wish you never do, but it comes with the territory sometimes. As long as you're attentive to it and push to fix it as soon as possible, we'll forgive ourselves for that.
So are there any cars in AMS2 that have been like particularly difficult to model?
I don't think any of them have been particularly difficult. I think cars usually are a pain to get right because they're basically just a stiff chassis over tires. And so they're super, super sensitive to really minor adjustments. I'm happy with the cars as they are now, save for some hard glitch that we had there that keeps suggesting the brakes are failing when they are not. I think it's mostly as we wanted. Surely it has several simplified components because we don't simulate chassis flex. So we're actually emulating chassis flex through the third spring code that we have in the engine. But the results ultimately, I think, are fairly accurate. And as an old-time go-karter, I'm satisfied with what we have there. There are several models that I would say are not quite there yet. But it's not because the car is more complex than others. In fact, I think most of the really complex cars we have in good shape already, including the most of the Formula cars, which are really more sophisticated than some of the others. And that's just for the most part down to details on the driveline and especially on the tire model. And the thing is, when you talk about tire model, even small tweaks can make a big difference. And if you do a small tweak, you have to rebalance the whole car around it. So it's a delicate process. And if you change that fundamentally, then the AI, which doesn't share the tire model with the player physics, you need to balance the car, the AI tire model to the player tire model so that the performance is more or less similar. So it's a really intrinsic process. And sometimes we know that something is not quite right, but we need to take it step by step in order not to be changing things around too much. Even so, we're still changing things around too much. I think most of the users have correctly complained about the fact that we are still modifying the physics a lot from build to build. But that's because there's still a lot to fine-tune there that has bigger consequences than we anticipate. I think we're gradually starting to settle with tire models. I think in November, we're planning for a big update in November, which will be our next big revision on the tires and suspension and driveline, similar to the one that we had in June. And I really expect and hope that by then things will be a lot more settled. Because then it's a matter, it's not just about the realism, right? You have to deliver something that is consistent so that the game is a stable enough platform for people to enjoy, to do league races on, to do single player championships on, without the prospect of things changing fundamentally from one build to another. So that's something, that's a stage that we hope that we already be in by now. Unfortunately, we are not yet, but the good side of it is that things can improve a lot still over a base that I think that's overall pretty good. But yeah, our target is to by the end of the year, have something that's more stable generally on the physics so that we don't have the perspective of, even though it will continue to evolve throughout development, it will be more spaced out and we will not have big changes in overall the physics or in specific cars from one build to another.
Tom, did you hear the same thing I heard, which is November will be another
Yeah,
big physics
of course.
update?
I love it.
Yeah. I love it too. The 1.2 or the Racing USA update was yeah, it really felt the difference there. So that's awesome
And
to
it
hear
was,
that the
if you guys only knew how minor the changes were. But it was a type of minor change that makes a big difference. Sometimes you don't know that until you do the change. There are so many parameters there that you can do incremental changes on that's really a process. And you have to go over things carefully. Because sometimes I think sometimes people are surprised because a car is driving well in one build and then another build they find is not driving so well. But that's largely because we have taken a step back to take two forwards later, because we're in process of developing a given component of the car. And then once we develop it, once you correct it, we need to rebalance the car around it. Because sometimes the car drives well. Even though it's flawed, it's inherently flawed, because we've managed to balance the car against those flaws. Once you correct the flaw, then the car is suddenly unbalanced because it has been balanced against that flaw, that flawed component. So you have to correct the whatever the flaw is, and then you need to rebalance the car to get it right again, and then overall you'll have a step forward. But it is a process. And if you're looking at it from a distance, if you're testing the game every 6 months, then you see big improvements, much more noticeably. But if you're keeping track of it month by month, or even every fortnight, depending on the rate of the updates, it can be a little bit more confusing. So I think that confuses a little bit the player base who is more keeping track of the game because of the nature of this process that is not always steps forward. Sometimes a little, there's a step sideways or a step back, so you can take a step forward later on in the process.
Right, so like a more global view as opposed to, just an instant view of changes. Not everything's going to be fixed right then and there and set in stone. That's fascinating. So,
A global view and a bigger time frame view, right?
right.
It's a process that sometimes doesn't net results within a month, but it takes 2 3 months before you have an actual step forward.
Yeah, I think that would be a good way to bring in the M1 Pro car. I think that's probably a good example of what you're talking about right now. Obviously, it's gone through what I call several di different iterations of like how the car behaves on track. And I think the most recent version, the last one was, I think, understeery. And I think you changed the tire treads, and it just sort of kind of plowed into the corners. But now it has with the driveline changes and everything that goes along with it. It actually behaves like really fantastic. This is my favorite version of the M1 Pro car. So,
Yeah, and mind you, and one of the things, one of the problems, I think that is very much the case with the Pro Car, is that even up until recently, a lot of the tires shared components, shared carcass physics or shared tread physics with one another because they were similar. Which, for example, wasn't a problem with Autovista 1 because there you had bespoke tire physics for each car. Even when some cars had very much similar or identical tires to one another. And with that, you have a lot of more customization option that you can do, but it's not actually logical because the tire for a given car should be similar to that other car. So it makes sense that some of these components are shared or largely similar. And that's the way Slide Mat Studios had it set up. They had a lot of common components in their physics for Project Cars 2. So we naturally followed the trend when we began with Autovista 2 with a lot of these shared components. But it gradually became obvious that that is not the way to get the optimal results. You had to have some bespoke parameters at least between different cars. The construction of the carcass especially can vary a lot depending on the tire dimensions. So we've gradually been creating more bespoke versions of tires for each car. So the
Right.
changes on the Pro car was not because we were changing the Pro car. We were changing some other car that had the same components with the Pro car, and the Pro car was being affected by it.
Yes.
Once we split the tire physics and focused only on tweaking the other car and adjusting the Pro car for different needs that it may have, then it worked out okay.
Yeah,
So
that's.
it was purely a process issue, not an inherent process development process of the car itself.
Right. So but I think we touched upon something there, the misconception between, and I think we've kind of danced around at this whole conversation. There's sort of like the conception out in the community that like this is the Madness engine. There's just something inherently flawed with it, but you've gone at length about how many changes that you've made and how you've kind of put a lot of off to the side and many of the things that are just organic to what you're doing. And I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions in the community out there. So, and I have to explain that I'm relatively new to this whole, sim racing community. I've only been around for, a couple of years, deep in, hardcore sim racing. So I kind of learned all of this Project Car 2 drama after the fact, and I'm still kind of trying to understand it. I've come to some kind of conclusion in my mind, but let's talk about the marketplace, the sim racing marketplace in, at large. The good, the bad, and the ugly. So there's with the Madness engine, there came the stigma of Project Cars 2. I'm sure you were aware of that when you came in here, but you were focused on what you could do. Have you observed any, consumer shifts or anything that you thought that was particularly challenging or something that you had to change fundamentally inside Reza to adapt to this overt criticism and to adapt to, market competitors?
Yes and no. I think we did notice changes. I think the internet has been always been a noisy place full of people venting frustrations about things that are not necessarily pertinent to what they're discussing. So that makes it a fairly unpleasant place to be around of for many things. It's not just in racing or just it seems to be prevalent in gaming and sim racing as a consequence, but anything, any topic, politics, movies, music, anything that is on the internet is has plenty of drama surrounding it, and needless drama, by and large. The engine that we're using was surrounded by drama. I will not get into how much of it was just people being over dramatic, or how much people that developed in the engine may have done something wrong to warrant this kind of reaction. But it's a fact. It's very much a fact to us that we have inherited some of these attitudes. And I think, to be fair, I think we have done some of the same mistakes in the development process, or have reproduced some of the same mistakes that have led people to be unsatisfied at some point. But we always approached it as something that would, the Automobilista 2, as something that would evolve over time, right? We wanted to deliver something good so that it could get better and end up somewhere great. That was the goal. We never anticipated that we would be great to start with. And we tried to communicate that as we were developing. But I think just the nature of things on the internet, everybody always is looking for the next big thing. And when we announced the Automobilista 2, there was pretty much a gap in new racing sims. So people, there was this natural hype building up behind the game, and people with all sorts of expectations. And it's just the dynamics of these things that you're never going to meet some of these expectations. And the people that didn't like the game engine that we were using, and we were approaching the new game with this expectation, or this preconception, so to speak, they were bound to never like it, I think, to one degree. Right. This I need to be careful here because it may sound like we are saying there's nothing wrong and people are just flipping out for no reason. I think we did have problems. I think we still have problems in terms of physics, in terms of driving experience, that is. But I really don't think that we have bigger problems than any other sim. And anybody has who's saying that we are extraordinarily out of whack in terms of what the physics are delivering. They are either conjecturing in terms of what they think is correct or not, overreacting over minor faults, or just going by their own prejudices. Right. And we can't really deal with that. We can't really do anything about that. The only thing that we can do, and it's the thing that we focus on doing, is doing the best work that we can. The issues that we know that are there, and that things that we know that we can improve on, we just focus on those, and I think naturally more people will come around as you deliver on these improvements that you know that you can deliver. But the stigma part of it, I think it's out of our control, and we'll always be there to some extent. And it sucks a little bit, but it's not something that we can lose too much sleep over. As I was saying earlier, sometimes you have to take the good with the bad. And I think with this engine, part of the bad was that we were going to inherit a lot of bad will surrounding it. So we just have to live with it to some extent.
Well, let's hone in a little bit. There is a big difference I like to bring up in almost every conversation that's on this topic, is that the big point here I think we should draw from this conversation is that you're committed to fix it. That was one of the major causes of the stigma in the first place.
But depends. Yeah, but depends on what you mean by it, because
or fix. Fix. Yeah. Continually work on the process. Continually make updates.
Yeah, I'll make clear. I'll make clear right now that I think that we the physics of most of the cars in Automobiles Are True are pretty damn good, and if you don't feel that way, that's unfortunate, and I don't say that in a dismissive way, because I know that it sucks if you're looking forward to a game and you bought the game and you can't hook up with it for one reason or another. That's going to be a source of frustration. So I understand that, and I don't say that in a way to be dismissive, but I know for a fact, and I can tell a couple of anecdotes here that it will illustrate how much of a psychological problem this may be. Back when we first closed our first deal with Stock Car, we had a lot of the game, or the first game that we did back in 2010. We had a lot of the game already developed, and then when we finally managed to work out a deal with the series, we set up a booth on the last race of the season to show the game to everybody in the series and to get people on board. And it was a booth with four simulators, and a lot of the drivers went there to test, the real drivers from the Stock Car series, and the feedback was almost was largely super positive. The first few drivers to come by the booth, they just got on with it straight away. And it was really exciting to see, because it for us it was a confirmation that of the realism of the sim. And then we had some others come by that they just couldn't connect with the car at all. And they were not, it was not because they were bad drivers. They were even people that were used to racing things, but they just couldn't read the car, what the car was doing in the sim, and how. The cues that the game was giving to them in terms of handling, not only by the physics, but the first feedback and everything else, they just couldn't hook up with it. So they were always confused about what the car was doing. And a lot of it is how our brains are wired. Some people are wired in different ways, and that will make people more susceptible to connecting with some things more than others. And it's not necessarily a question of realism. But even small details on tire model, especially, can lead to people connecting with one game and not with the other. And that's very little to do with realism, and just some, and a lot of to do with perception and how our brains are wired. So we know for a fact, and we knew when we changed to this engine, that some people who liked Automobilista 1 would not like Automobilista 2. We also knew some people that didn't like the first one would like the second one, and there would be people that would like both. Because to us, they are very similar to myself, and I've been a sim racer throughout. I'm not just the guy running the business, right? I've been a sim racer pretty much. I started off as a sim racer, and I still see myself as one. So when I say that both are similar and they're technically very similar, it's not speculation, right? That is the case. But still, you're going to lose some people because of the way their brains are wired. And
right.
That's not to say that there are not flaws there also, that some of which can be fixed and should be fixed. But if I approach the same look, let's see what is wrong with it. If I do that with Automobilista 2, I'll find plenty of things that are wrong that I'd like to correct. If I did that to Automobilista 1, I would also find plenty of things that are not spot on. If I did that with any sim, and I do that regularly because I drive all the main sims regularly to check up how things are progressing on other games, and they all have the same nature. And if you approach that, if you get into a game and you try it and you don't get on with it, and you say, okay, I don't like this one. It doesn't really work for me. That's one thing, and it's one thing that we expected. It's another thing, and I think that's because of the atmosphere that has been created around the game. If you're constantly second-guessing the game and assuming because you're not liking something or you're not getting on with something or disagree with something the sim is doing, it's always going to be because the game is doing something wrong, then that's a prejudice that is built in there. It's not really the reality of the game itself. Because the reality of the game itself, I think, is a very good standard. I think we're happy with it. And I'd say, I'm sorry to say, if people aren't happy with it, it might just mean that this game is not for them. And that's okay. I think many games are not for many people. That's part of gaming, inevitably. You're not going to please everyone. We're not aiming to, and people shouldn't aim for that either.
Yeah, I think that one thing that you could do as a sim racer is, you know, if you find something's wrong with the Omega and it doesn't agree with you, just jump into the Stock Car 2019. It's fantastic. It just shows you the potential there. You know, you can't overgeneralize just because you don't want like one aspect of one car to extrapolate that over across the entire thing. There's plenty of stuff to enjoy here, but
it's fair to say, I think it's fair, one criticism that I would think it's fair, you can't really say to people, oh, drive just this car is good, the other ones just disconsider because they're not the best. I think we have plenty of cars that are representative of what they should be,
of course,
the stock car is one of them, and even the stock car has flaws. It's too fast. It's a couple of seconds faster than it should be. And it probably drives better because of that, because the fact it has a surplus of performance. The moment we correct that, people are going to complain because it doesn't drive as good as him anymore. So all of that comes with the territory. And I wouldn't say that's fair to say people, oh, you should drive this. The only thing I would recommend is don't drive the latest cars, because the way we develop the same in order to assess the value of the game, which is the normal way, especially YouTubers go about evaluating games. They jump into the latest update to test the latest goodies, and they draw a judgment because that's how they're going to get clicks on their videos. But it doesn't really match with the way we're developing the sim, because we are always developing everything. So inevitably, because of that, the nature of that process, the first version of anything is always going to be the least developed version of that car, of that track, of that feature. It's only going to get better from there. So usually the older stuff will have higher standards. But even that is not a sure thing, because some cars we just have a little bit more trouble to get right than others. While others, we get there straight away. Right. When we were talking, again, bringing up the philosophical point about taking things, the good with the bad, of anything. When you have a scene that is so big, that offers so much, and I don't think, and I can say that with confidence, no other serious racing scene is as ambitious in terms of scope as ours is. That is the good thing about it. A part of the problem there is that as much as we try it, it will take a while for all of them to be at the same level. All of those cars to be at the same level in terms of realism. That is a bad part of it. And if you don't like that, if you can't accept that as an inherent component of this type of game design, then you're not getting what the game is about. And maybe you don't like it. You don't want a game that is so big. It has so many cars. You just want to drive GTT cars around Spa. And that's right. Perfectly fine. There is nothing wrong with that. But there is another game already doing that. We're doing something else. Right. Which is not going to suit everyone.
One of the things that drew me particularly to AMS 2, and I've had several wow moments throughout my, you know, playing time. The reason why I mentioned the stock car, you know, 2017 was it's one of those wow moments that I have. I'll always have a place in my heart for that car, M1 Pro car. And there's a list of cars I can go down that are like that. Every car I drive, it's sort of like I'm impressed in one way or the other. But I wanted to talk about this dynamic racing experience that you've created that has been particularly impressive to me. It touches on this subject that we were just talking about with how people perceive the game. And I called it, I think, one of the previous Bullcast eyes, I called it Uncanny Valley. I don't know if you listen to it, Ron Otto. I don't expect you do. But Uncanny Valley is sort of like this phenomenon where in CGI movies, where you have an animated character where the creators make the animated character so close to real life that it becomes uncanny to the viewer and they become uncomfortable. So, so that was the sort of an analogy that I put in place. You've introduced some fantastic elements that I think are stretching the industry as regarding the dynamic racing experience, including the tire model, including the weather. I know, Oz, you wanted to talk about some of these things in particular as well. Did you want to go into it, like the set attire model? You're probably more familiar with it than I am.
Yeah, this is really one of those things where I believe this is largely ignored in all of the physics discussions as well, because people, when they talk about physics, what they usually talk about is the handling, and specifically, does it gel with me? So one of the things that I think gets ignored is just how complicated the set attire model is. And I mean that in the sense that it offers the... Renato, you can probably confirm this, but it has tire degradation and blistering, and it has grain, and then it has like the heat cycle stuff. And then obviously also tire pressures and camber also play with the contact patch in a dynamic way. And then you also have live track providing rubbering at places where cars actually drive. And then track temperature is one major thing, I believe, because for example, Long Beach gets really just too hot really easily. So
there is also barometric pressure, which is something that many scenes don't yet model. I think maybe Assetto Corsa Competizione is the only one that also has it, and Project Cars 2, of course. And that is a major component to vehicle dynamic simulation, because cars will behave completely different depending on how high or close to the sea level a track is. It will affect tires, it will affect engine, it will affect the aerodynamics. So anything that doesn't have that, and it's curious when we're talking about realism, relative realism, how good or how realistic one is versus the other. I think that's one of the fairly crucial things that we have in Automobilista 2, that not all things already have, and it's an important one. So all these dynamic components are very important, but there is also the other side of the coin, which is the more dynamics you're simulating, the more complex a simulation model is overall, more room there is to get things wrong and to have something be the weak link. So sometimes it's easier to get a decent result out of something simpler than it is to get out of something that's really complex. And for a long time, it was a reason I remember Niels never wanted to go to a physical tire model, because in the simpler model that we had with the ICI motor, we had complete control of the tire. So there were some dynamics that were not simulated, but the control that we had over the tire model and the resulting experience from that simpler model was a net positive overall. I think SETA is not actually the most complex physical model that is out there. It actually does a lot of the calculations within it. There's not a lot of parametrization of the tires that we can tweak. But even then, there's plenty. So plenty to screw up if you don't know what you're doing. So it's a. I feel that it's a good halfway point between the more complex models and the simpler one that we had. But yeah, if you take that with all the other complex dynamics that are active in the sim at any given point, things can go bad until you get everything 100% fine-tuned. You can have some weak link that will spoil the experience somewhat. I think we don't have many of those anymore, if any. For a while we did, but it's still a process. I think and the good thing about it is I think we're not even halfway through yet. So imagine where we will be towards the end of the dev cycle, because that's also an interesting thing, because people all, like, especially people that were already following us and were fans of Automobilista 1, they like to talk about Automobilista 1 as though it was how it ended throughout its dev cycle. Whereas I remember very well the first year, people were brutal with us because they were not happy with what we were offering. And that a little bit prepared me for what would come with Automobilista 2, because I knew we also would have a similar learning curve and a process to go through. But yeah, this kind of project, especially with this kind of scope for a company this our size, takes time to come together. It's part of it. It's a process. But I always thought that we had something good. I think we have something that is better, and we're looking forward to deliver something that is great. I think we have the means together.
I actually love it, to be honest. Because I took the C3R out at Spielberg Historic, and that car with the live track and the grip level changes when you go offline, it's just amazing immersive experience for me.
I think there are experiences that already several experiences that you can have in Automobilista 2 that are really unique to Automobilista 2 that goes from, in terms of simulation, what is simulated and the level that it is simulated at, to what kind of content that we have, to how it's presented, it's really unique. So it's unfortunate sometimes that we boil down what is essentially a very complex product or project to a couple of talking points, right? That's how things tend to be discussed on the internet. But I certainly think that anybody who takes the decision or what they're going to play by the sum of these talking points are selling themselves short and potentially passing on something that they would find quite special if they spent more time with it.
Right. And it seems like the big challenge also is like you mentioned before, the preconceived notions. I think it's also a testament to the quality of the sim racing world out there right now. The fact that we have so much on offer in the marketplace, that any preconceived notion that's drawn from them is automatically going to flavor people's opinions of anything that comes after it. And I think that's a big challenge that AMS2 faces every day. But you're convincing people one at a time. You've convinced me. You've convinced Oz here. Let's segue into the future of AMS2. You know, this is a big, big project. So we knew this from the get-go. You have a lot of upcoming things that you've mentioned, and we know about Racing USA 2 and 3. What are three of the big things that you have coming up within the next couple of months, and could you describe them a little bit so we have something to look forward to?
In terms of content, I think the Racing USA Part 2 will be very interesting. We're looking forward to that one. We have some very cool historical single-seaters from America, which are very exciting cars, and cars that I have a history on because I worked on them in the past. And the tracks, it's a completely different racing culture in the US versus the rest of the world, right? So as we go further into that, I think the game will only get richer. So part two will be another step in that direction. The multiplayer, I think, will be a lot more solid, a more solid platform by the end of the year. I can't say whether it will have populated servers every day, because that doesn't depend on us solely. It depends on the user base wanting to go there for their multiplayer fix. But I think we will be offering a lot more value there than we have been doing up to now. And the polish itself, we talked about the big physics update that we have in November. There will be also some good incremental audio developments by then. So all of these adds up to really big leaps in quality overall. In this, towards the end of the year, I think we will have another good step up in every front, basically. The UI also, a lot of good, interesting work being done to the UI, which should improve things first. The AI also will be much better by the end of the year, so the single-player racing will be even higher quality, higher standard than it already is. And as far as this year goes, I think those are the big keynotes. Further down the line, I think the career mode will be something special. I think that's one thing that we haven't talked much about, and I would rather wait a little bit more until we're further along, until we can talk about it. But it's one of the things that is probably not being paid attention to, that we have this plan, that we are working towards a very interesting career mode. And I think there's a lot of, there's not many details out there because we don't want to promise too much too soon.
Right.
But I think it will be an exciting one. And I think that will be when Automobilista 2 will make a lot more sense. And what we have done up to now will make a lot more sense to a lot more people.
Great. It'll come together. So that actually concludes all of the content that I had, or all the questions, I should say. Oz, did you have anything else that you wanted to fill in on or touch upon?
Well, I assume we can't get any more specific thing out of you, but
yeah, everyone's been.
I'll certainly be up to part two when time comes, so we can talk about a little bit more about the specifics of various things in due time.
Okay,
there's,
great.
There's all kinds of speculation going, like,
oh my god,
in all the chats, like. Well, we'll.
Oh, that's good. It's fun, isn't it, to speculate a little bit?
Every track.
It's a large part of the fun. The only problem is, we talked a little bit sometimes. Back when we announced Automobilista 2, there was this big hype in the community because, it's going to be Automobilista 1 with the Madness technology. It's going to be great. And then by the time we released, people were, it's just Automobilista 1 with Madness technology, because you got used to that perspective, and people get used to good things quickly, right? So that's right. One of the reasons why we don't want to give away too much too soon, and let people find out as we manage to put things together. That makes it a little bit of a slow burner, maybe slower than most people would enjoy. But it also helps us ensure that the payoff in the end is more valuable.
Very nice. Very cool. So let's get into what I'm going to call the lightning round. Are you ready, Renato?
Sure.
I'm going to ask you some questions here. First thoughts, okay? First question is, what is your favorite car and track combo? And I know you answered this question on the race department interview. I'm going to nail you down on this. What's the car and track that you would drive if you could only drive one more car and track?
If I tell you, it's like choosing a son.
Oh.
Or one of my childs. It's really hard. It's really hard because whatever I'm working on at the time, I'm in love with. So if you're working on, if I'm working on Monza, and I'm driving the vintage around the 10 kilometers version of Monza, that is a thrill. That is a thrill because we're bringing it to life. We're bringing something that we didn't have to life. So usually my excitement is concentrated on what we're bringing up to life. Once it's out the door, I still love it, but the focus is already on the next, on the next big thing. And that's, I think, is a little bit of the mindset of the developer. I really like the driving the Formula V10 and the classics around Silverstone 2001 and Silverstone 1991, which is a layout I always loved, both of them, which no scene now has ever had it, or the old Hockenheim also with these same cars. I was a big Formula One fan to begin with, right? So especially in this era, the late 80s, early 90s, so I will tend to gravitate towards that. But it's anything, really. Anything any car that we bring in game or any track that we bring in game is because we saw a video on YouTube or we saw somebody talking about it really passionately, and then we watched something about it and we're really excited about it. So there is always some inherent value on any reasonable combo that you can make in the game. That I think it's valuable. I wouldn't be able to single out just one.
All right, I won't hold you to that, but I can actually relate to that, to be honest. So that answer is reasonable. So next question, ready? How do you pronounce Jacarepaguá?
Jacarepaguá.
Jacarepaguá. Okay.
Awesome. There is an accent on the last A, so it's Jacarepaguá.
Paguá.
The emphasis is on the end.
All right.
Jacarepaguá.
I'll try to clean it up if I ever come to Brazil. I don't think it's good. I think it's going to be a major
that's
challenge.
That's a mouthful even for Brazilians. As a child, I could never pronounce it right. So don't feel too bad if you can't pronounce it. Okay. Most of these names are from Native American heritage here in Brazil, from South America, from Tupi language, and many of them are quite a mouthful, even for native Portuguese speakers.
Right. What's your favorite genre of music, and do you listen to music while you drive?
I certainly, when I drive a real car, not when I drive on the sim.
Okay.
And I like anything that is high quality. I'm a rocker from first and foremost, so anything classic rock, progressive rock, alternative rock. I'll give you a tip and say that my most valuable musical experience was attending the Dave Gilmour concerts in Brazil back in 2015. That was almost a religious experience for me. So that will already lead you into what my preferences are.
Okay. Next question. Damper transition speeds, yes or no?
Some cars already have them. They're just not available to adjusting yet. May come. Probably will come.
That's a personal question for me. Honestly,
I had to put that in there. I know that you're looking forward to that. So it's possible. There is the thing is, everything that you add has ramifications, right?
Right.
So it ends up being a much bigger project than you anticipated.
I know.
It has to come at the right time. But I think it will come at some point.
For someone like me, it would be if you know how many hours I put into these cars.
At some point, we will run out of things. Of big things to do, and then we can focus on the them.
All right, well, let me know when you just give me a hint if that ever does come.
We'll get there,
and it'll sustain me for the next 6 months or so. How do you keep your front left tire temperatures warm at Cascaval?
I don't. I just cope with it.
You just cope. Okay. Do you have Brazilian... This is actually an honest question. Do you have Brazilian steakhouses in Brazil?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, are they the kind where
one
they...
one of them.
Do they come around
if you come
the
here,
table?
Yeah, if you...
With the cowboy here, gauchos?
Yeah, yeah. That's, we're not as big as the Argentinians on this front, but pretty close, pretty close. And if you come, and if you come to my place on the right day, it will be a steakhouse itself that you enjoy.
And for people out there, Brazilian steak is, I think it's a, you would call it a pit style kind of steak. That's how you prepare it, correct?
Yeah, a bit style, meaning the type of barbecue. Yeah, I think that's what it is. I never heard that nomenclature for it.
Well, I think it's you have stakes in the ground, and you have a fire, a central fire. That's where the Brazilian steakhouses around where I love around me. It's always
it depends on the kind of meat. If you're doing the ribs are usually doing that way. I usually done that way, and you leave that cooking for several hours. But there are also more regular barbecue styles.
Okay.
We don't usually have the American style barbecue with the little grill. So usually something that is built into the house, into the walls or something like that. Yeah, it's more on the cut of the meat that I think is the difference, more than the cooking.
Okay. And what's your favorite cut?
We don't.
It's I like ribs very much, and no one can say no to a picanha. I don't know how that translates to English, sorry, but look up picanha and we'll know what I mean.
Okay, great. Oz?
We don't have Brazilian steakhouses here, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
You sit at the table, and in the United States, this is how it works. You sit at the table, and you have a little card that's either red or green, and you can flip that card up and down, and walking around the restaurant,
meat never stops coming.
Oh yes, and the gauchos are coming around with basically a metal spike with all of these types of well, it's the same cut, and they all are holding different cuts, and they come to, if you have a green, if your card is green, they take a massive knife out and they just shave the caramelized steak. I'm making myself hungry. The caramelized steak right onto your plate. And then you can get sausage, you can get New York strip, you can get ribeye. You know, it's fantastic. I think you'd love
it. And it's as much as you can eat.
Yes, all you can eat, bro.
The last... I have to find one of these.
Yeah, well, you come to the States, I'll take you one. I guarantee.
I'll come to Brazil and you'll find the real deal.
The heck with it. Let's just go straight to Brazil. Let's go.
Yeah. Right.
Final question. Now, this is going to be... Part of me thinks it's going to be hard. Part of me thinks that you might know this. It's a two-part question. How many tracks in AMS2 right now?
I know how many layouts we have are close. I think it's 110 layouts, if I remember correctly. And maybe... Are we counting historical versions? Because historical versions of tracks,
every option of every track that you can count, including cart tracks.
Yeah, I would say about 50 to 60 locations, including the historical versions. It's a lot. One way or another, it's a lot. And over 100 layouts.
It's 123 specific selections.
I'm a bit out of.
This was designed to be a gotcha question. How many cars in AMS2?
Over 50.
Over 50 is a good answer. Oz, do you have a guess?
you don't want to. I run a website that has all the cars, so you don't want to ask me about that.
Okay, it's 100.
It's a fair bit more.
It's 126.
But how you're counting variations of how are you counting
every choosable option, every choosable car is 126 different variations.
Yeah, I think I'm counting individual classes only.
Okay,
that's why I'm coming short. There you go, we have a new ad right there. Over 100 cars, over 100 tracks, only Automobilista 2.
Yes, and this is for the mathematicians out there. If either of you answer this, I'm going to be just blown away. But how many setups, individual setups, track specific, does that equal?
Two.
Over 50.
Over 50. It's 15,498 individual track specific setups that would have to be
there
programmed.
There you go. Then when somebody asks, oh, how come there is no multiple setup options for each car? That's the reason. It's way too many.
Yep. Well, Renato,
at some point we'll have Tom working with us and he'll help us.
Ooh.
Well, well, at some point, that I hope that comes to fruition, Renato. I sincerely do, and I'd also like to sincerely thank you on behalf of Oz and myself for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to meet you and get to know you. Been a high point for me. I wish you and Reza the best of luck moving forward.
Thanks, guys. It's been my pleasure. I can only thank you for your dedication and creating quality in depth. Content for Automobilista 2. I think that's it's not always that you get that sort of quality content for any game, not just Automobilista 2. So I'm deeply appreciative of that, and I look forward to talking more in the future.
Well, everything that every minute I've put into what I've done has been equally provided to me by the pleasure and by the what I've been getting from your work product and your team's work product. So thank you again.
And for all of you out there, all of my supporters, friends, 27 Club members, and anyone new, thank you for spending time with us today. Coming up, more builds, more bolt casts, and there are some other exciting projects in the pipeline as well. If you have found value in this project and are inclined to support the channel, a YouTube membership option has been enabled along with a new merchandise store through Spreadshop. So feel free to check out the links in the description below. In the meantime, thanks for watching. And take care.